Good afternoon, everyone. If you can take a seat, we've got a very interesting session this afternoon. I'm Mariana Newkirk, Associate Dean in the Faculty of Medicine for Research and also the University Delegate, but not for much longer. And my replacement for a University Delegate is actually in the room, and she's hiding at the back. I'll ask her to put her hand up, and that's Sherry Baum. The official notification is going to actually go out at some point, so you'll get to know more about Sherry down the line. But it's been fun working as a university delegate, and it's actually in that role that I got to know Jennifer O'Donohue. From CIHR, and Jen is really very knowledgeable about this whole system. And as a university delegate, we actually got to test drive a few different aspects, and she can tell you that we gave her a hard time. But it's a working relationship, and they're very good at listening to us, although some of our investigators think that, you know, the old system is still the very best, but we're moving ahead. The train has left the station, and Jen is going to bring you up to date about what the ambitions are and then really dive into more on the foundation side. But before we do that, I also want to make sure that everyone knows who the people in OSR, Office of Sponsored Research, who can actually help you if you have questions. And Maureen Donato is down here, and Olga Nyberger is down here. So for any questions that you have after the session, by all means, send them in to Maureen or Olga, and they'll do their best to help you out. Jen, I'll pass it over to you, and thank you very much for coming from Ottawa, and look forward to your insight.
Thank you very much. So thanks for having me here today. I'm going to do a fairly short presentation, so we have a fair amount of time for questions. I also want to introduce Robin Tamlin and Paul Lasko, who are both scientific directors at CIHR, and I am going to call on them to help me with some of the questions as they come up. So just in terms of background, I think this is the third time we've actually been in this room in the last 3 years to talk about reforms. They have been a fairly long process, a fairly drawn-out discussions with lots of different folks across the country to make sure that the design that we're actually putting forward is an achievable or a reasonable design. The objective of the reform is to capture excellence across all pillars. We're really trying to remove some of the barriers that researchers told us existed in our current system, to capture innovation, to integrate new talent, and to improve sustainability. We're also trying to fix a number of other problems in our system with the way that the competitions are run. And the reason we're doing that is we heard from so many different researchers and reviewers across the country that things needed to change. We are trying to reduce burden for peer reviewers and for applicants, trying to improve consistency, improve transparency, and manage the growing discrepancy between research evolution and the committee structure that we have in place today. I think if you think about our committee structure, and in our presentation, the last time we were here, we put up some diagrams on the screen. It's been really difficult for CIHR to stay in pace with the science. So the design that we're proposing flips the way we're assigning applications to reviewers and introduces something we're calling application-focused review. So in terms of the process we've gone through, 2 years ago, we released a discussion document for consultation. We did a number of face-to-face discussions, web-based discussion forums. There was a structured survey. There were town halls at over 80 institutions. We took all of that feedback. We published it on the web, and those documents are still all available for those people that would like to read them. If you haven't already, I hope you have. We released the design of our new programs with the changes that were incorporated based on all the consultations we did a year ago. And then just 2 weeks ago, we released the first funding opportunity for Foundation Scheme, which I'll go into in more detail. So the new design, two separate complementary funding schemes, a project scheme, which is about ideas, a foundation scheme, which is about funding programs of research. a peer review process that includes application-focused review, multi-stage review, structured review criteria, and remote review of applications in the initial stages. There still is committee meetings at the final stages of review because we felt that was important to have that discussion of the gray zone, but the first two stages for foundation are remote and the first stage for project scheme is remote. We're also introducing a college of reviewers, which is really thinking about our reviewers as a base that needs to be managed differently. Today, we don't have a lot of information about the reviewers that come and do all of the hours that they do. So the idea is to actually put together a college where we have consistent training, consistent ways of interacting and networking across reviewers, and just a better understanding of the profile of the reviewers that are actually adjudicating the grants that we receive, or the applications we receive. So in terms of the design elements, this information is all on the web, but we do believe that the design elements that we are implementing will reduce burden, and that they're important to actually implement together. One of the big questions we've received is, why are you doing so many things at once? It's a lot of change for everybody to take. Part of it is because everything works together. It's very difficult for us to do true application-focused review if we don't introduce remote processes. Very difficult for us to do structured review without a structured application. So we're implementing a number of different things, and I'll go through them in more detail for the foundation scheme. So College of Reviewers, centrally managed national resource. The intent of this is to actually build this college in partnership with a number of funders across the country. It will be made up of faculties of experts, both from both within and outside Canada, and there'll be specific roles that aren't that different from things like chairs and SOs that we have today. There will be specific programs to train and mentor reviewers, and the recruitment will include transitioning existing reviewers to the college in consultation with chairs and SOs, as well as a number of targeted recruitment strategies which our scientific directors will be helping with over the next 18 months or so. So in terms of the transition, we've had lots of complaints about how complicated this picture is. It is on the web. It's very difficult to read on this slide. It's in a lot of the documentation that we've made available. But what it shows is the phasing out of our existing programs. So we're in an OGP right now. Many of you may have been at committee meetings over the last few weeks. There is one more regular OGP, then a transitional OGP. In parallel to that transitional OGP is the first foundation scheme live pilot. Then there's a second foundation scheme live pilot, and then the project scheme. In the meantime, a number of smaller pilots are going on, and I'll talk about those in a second, to really test out the mechanics that we're introducing. So in terms of pilots, we've got one that is complete. So we did a pilot in our fellowship competition where we tested some of the concepts of remote review. Did anyone participate in that pilot in the room? Anyone a reviewer on our fellowship? No? Yes? Okay, so maybe when we get to Q's and A's, you can give your perspective on that. We surveyed the reviewers that participated in the pilot, and we're just bringing actually to Science Council next week the results of that pilot, so they'll be available on the web fairly soon. Knowledge synthesis, so one of our knowledge translation programs, we're in the process of doing a pilot with that one. It is piloting a lot of the elements of the project scheme: application-focused review, remote review, structured applications, structured review. We've gone through the application process, we've surveyed the applicants and had very positive feedback about the structured application, and we're just heading into review in January. So we've gone through the matching process, and we're just scheduling the training for reviewers in the new year. We'll also be doing pilots on other knowledge translation programs, and then there's the first foundation scheme, which I'll talk about in a bit. So I'm just going to stop there for a second because I'm going to dive deep into the foundation scheme, which is our first release. Are there any questions about the general reforms before I move forward? Yeah? No, when I say we'll work with the other partners to actually build the college, a lot of you as reviewers review for CHR, but you also review for provincial funding agencies, some of the charities. So there is an interest in the group of funders that we actually think about the resource a little bit more in terms of managing people's workloads so that we're not asking the same person over and over and over again to participate in review. So that's the idea. It's still early days, and we're still in discussions with the partners about how that will work, but that is the plan, that we set it up as a national resource. Yep. So there'll be a number of ways to participate in the college. We are going to transition existing reviewers. So there'll be a validation process with chairs and SOs to bring in existing reviewers. We're having discussions with a number of international funders that we work closely with about sharing reviewers across in the different countries. So we've certainly talked to Australia, England, and the NIH as well. So there'll be different ways to target international reviewers. There'll be a self-nomination process that researchers or institutions can use to nominate people, and that those will go through a review process. Yeah? So it'll be similar as it is today. We do use international reviewers today. If there are specific reviewers that you do not want to be involved in the review process, there is an opportunity to actually put that on the application. But the process in terms of matching reviewers to applications, it will be expertise-based. Yeah, there's a question in the back. We're in an OOGP right now. There's one in the next cycle, as there always has been. And then we're into the transitional OOGP. So there's really only two, the one that we're in, which the application deadline's already passed, one more regular OOGP, and then we're into the transitional OOGP.
To be clear, the transitional OOGP and
OOGP. Yes, yes, it is. So the only thing different about the transitional OGP, and the funding opportunity was released a couple of weeks ago, is that it's a merger of two OGPs into one, so there isn't the same 400 grants that we would normally do in a typical OGP. There's an earlier registration, and the timing is a little different because we've merged two competitions together. Any other, yeah, just in the back? So I'll get into that in more detail, but effectively the budget for the transitional OOGP and the first foundation live pilot are shared. So it's one budget. In the way that we have one budget for two OOGPs in a year, that budget will be split across the transitional OOGP and the foundation scheme. In the funding opportunity, you'll see that we put ranges of number of grants that will be funded. It'll depend on what the application pressure is to the new foundation scheme, but that budget will be shared.
Can I ask about the March 14th upcoming? Because you'll probably get a lot of people who would otherwise have renewed at September 14th. You don't want to go without funding. So we can anticipate more applications than what we will at March 14th.
Yes. So we've been modeling to try and anticipate how many more we'll get, but we do believe there will be more, and we'll manage that. There'll likely have to be more committees that for that particular cycle than we have today, but we'll manage through it.
To ask the questions, can you come and speak into the mic because it's being recorded?
Oh, and you're not hearing the questions. Do you want me to repeat the questions?
Okay,
I can repeat them. Yeah, a question in the front.
So, I think that the plan was always to change the two foundation scheme and project scheme in a smooth manner. But in fact, it's not really smooth because the project scheme is going to start in about 2.5 years or something like that, right? So somebody who needs to renew his grant in September 2014 is forced to go to the foundation scheme, because he cannot fund his laboratory for 2.5 years otherwise. Can you comment?
I was going to say, is there a question? So I would say the transition planning for this change has been one of the most difficult exercises that the task force and the Science Council undertook as part of the planning, and there's no perfect answer. So in all of the different scenarios that we did, this was the best option that we came up with to try and minimize the overall impact, give enough time for people to plan for the change, and still have opportunities to actually apply for funding in a reasonable window. For some people, the timing is really not ideal. For others, it's very ideal. It's advantageous for some and not for others. But it was the best option that we could actually come up with at the time. And I don't know, Paul, do you want to comment on that?
Well, just to address a specific question, there is this early 2015 open operating.
Yo, you need to go to the mic, Mike. There, Paul.
Actually, I was going to make a general point, which is it's going to be very difficult for people, and I'm sure there are going to be many questions, for everyone to come to the microphone. So I'm actually going to volunteer when people raise their hand to deliver the microphone to them. I think that's going to work best. So, but I actually do have a question also. But I'll...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, just to address a specific question, if you have an operating grant up for renewal in September 2014, you can go to the foundation scheme. You could also go to the transitional OOGP in early 2015. There are two gaps in project grant type things, each one lasting a few months, but there's no 2.5 year gap because that's the reason the transitional OOGP is in there.
Okay, since I have the microphone, I get to ask the question. I remember, I think the first time Jane Aubin came here, she threw out some numbers. I just did back-of-the-envelope calculations, and it became quite clear that 10% of Canadians are going to be funded, not Canadians, but Canadian researchers are going to be funded through the foundation scheme. And then in your questionnaire, we were asked, would you be interested in applying for the foundation scheme? And yet I've never seen the data, maybe I missed it, on how many people indicated they'd be interested in the foundation scheme. Because you said it sort of subtly. Application pressure, what are you actually anticipating? What proportion of investigators do you think are going to actually apply to the foundation scheme?
That's a great question. We've had lots of discussions internally to try and figure out who does programmatic research today. Our OGP funds both programmatic and project-based. In terms of the numbers, the modeling that was done modeled all sorts of different scenarios. The final scenario that was approved by Science Council was a split of 45% of the budget to foundation scheme, 55% of the to project scheme. What that represents on our 3,000 NPIs that we support today is about 30% of NPIs in the project scheme. When we did the survey and asked people to identify, I would say 25% said project, 25% said foundation, and 50% said, I'm not sure, maybe one, maybe the other. So we don't have good information. That's part of why we're doing early registration for the first foundation scheme, so we have a better sense. So any more general questions? Because I'll get into the foundation scheme, and then we can keep the floor open. Question at the back?
I guess it's a general question. The group that I see falling through the cracks the most,
The group that seems disadvantaged the most from the way I'm reading it is the group that's coming in the March competition. They weren't eligible for the foundation scheme, which takes place in the fall. So they're coming in the March. If they don't get renewed or funded, they no longer have that fall competition to go into. Not only that, the application pressure will be greater in this March competition, as you just said, because you have some September people coming in early. So that group, in my analysis of it, seems to be the most disadvantaged group, and I'm just wondering if you're thinking about doing anything for that group.
So I think that a lot of thinking did go on in terms of the transition plan. It's part of why we have changed our policies on submitting a grant early. So people can submit early without penalty, so if they aren't successful, they can keep the remainder of their grant, unlike in a normal OGP cycle. The transitional OGP is there, and we're really asking people to plan ahead. So there is opportunities to extend the date on your grant, but if you have a specific situation that you want to discuss, I'd encourage you to talk to your research office or send us a note, and we can actually have someone talk about your individual situation. But there are people who are not, it's not ideal for everybody. And I would say, and I went through many, many different scenarios, this was the best option that we could actually come up with to meet all of the things that Science Council was looking for. So any other general questions? So I'll keep going. Just talking about the foundation scheme. So did everybody see the funding opportunity that what did come out a couple of weeks ago? Yes, everyone knows the funding opportunity went out. No reaction. Hopefully you know it's there. So the foundation scheme is designed to contribute to a sustainable foundation of health research. It's expected to support a broad base of research leaders across all career stages. It's not just for senior investigators, it's for new investigators and mid-career investigators as well. We're trying to provide flexibility to pursue new and innovative lines of inquiry as part of an overall program of research. We understand that some researchers do programmatic research, some researchers do project research, and that's why we have the two schemes. People keep asking about their grant A and OGP that they want to renew in the foundation scheme, and it really isn't about grant A or grant B in the OGP. It's about a program of research. So a longer-term line of inquiry that you are pursuing as an investigator. The foundation scheme will have one competition a year. It's three phases. So this diagram has been out there for at least a year now. First stage is about caliber of the applicant. There's a short application and a CV. Second stage is about the quality of the program, the expertise, experience, and resources. And the third stage is a discussion in the gray zone. And I'll go through that in a bit more detail. So it is a structured adjudication process. There is mock-ups on the slide and on the web. Each criterion will be looked at, and reviewers will be asked to give a letter on the strength of that application, as well as identify strengths and weaknesses. The application itself will be structured, and the application will be structured in the same way that we're asking reviewers to do their review. So the information, and if any of you are involved in the knowledge synthesis pilot, this is how we're building the pilot. The information that's in the application is directly easy to find in terms of the criteria that we're asking reviewers to look at. So this is a very busy slide. It is on the web as well. And Paul has been thinking about this as much as I have, so he may have something to add here. But the idea is, in stage one, your application is sent to five reviewers. Every reviewer gets somewhere between 10 and 20 applications to review. We're asking reviewers to go through the individual structured criteria and give letters for each of the areas. That will convert into a rank. Reviewers check the rank for their entire pile of applications and then submit their initial reviews. Once they've submitted their initial reviews, they're able to go online, have a discussion with four other reviewers. You'll see the names of the reviewers. Reviewers won't be able to participate until all the reviews are submitted. Each reviewer is asked to discuss, focusing on discrepancies. And when we did this for the fellowship pilot, that was what we heard from reviewers, is they only did really spend time online if there were discrepancies. We're not asking anybody to reach consensus, but we are asking that you be comfortable with what you've come up with. And then once the discussion is finished, you submit your final review. The first time we did online discussion, we had it open for 2 weeks, and we were told by the reviewers that's way too long. The synthesis pilot, I think they're planning on opening it for 5 days. We've heard even 5 days may be too long, so we'll keep testing it. I believe for those of you who've done this with the NIH, there are much shorter windows in the range of 48 hours. So we're still looking at that. So once the reviews are submitted, every application has five rankings, not scores, rankings, a consolidated ranking, and a standard deviation. And that's the information that will be used to push people to the next stage. Stage two will be very similar. In stage three, those applications that are highly ranked, that all reviewers agree are highly ranked, will get funded. Those that are ranked very low and all of reviewers agree will not. And then those that are in the middle will go forward for discussion in the gray zone. The gray zone reviewers will see the reviews for the first stage and the second stage. In the foundation scheme, it's one committee at the end. So in project scheme, there'll be more than one, somewhere in the order of eight. So there's a question on this side.
So just to be clear, so each reviewer will have 15 to 20 applications, but not necessarily the same applications
right.
as the other people. So we may overlap only by two or three. So I'm going to rank order my 15 to 20, but maybe I've got a horrible batch and there's one shining application that will be ranked top. Somebody else may have 15 or 20 shining applications. So how then can you really put them together? They're not comparable. They're not the same batch. You know what I mean?
So we're asking people to rank. You're right. There is a chance, very small chance, that someone has a horrible pile of applications and someone else has a super pile of applications. But with five reviewers, the standard deviation will help us see if there is an issue. So because we're doing multi-stage and you still have an opportunity for discussion, it's those ones that we'll catch at the final stage in the discussion period. So we've modeled it with existing grants as well. Now, Paul, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, if I can just add, I think just two points. One is that the idea here is that if a particular application comes out at or near the top in five different sets of applications, and I think we can be pretty confident that that's a strong application. The other thing is that we have panels now that get different sets of applications, and people indulge in arguments, lengthy arguments, about whether or not the quality of applications in panel A is the same as the quality of applications in panel B, and yet we fund a flat proportion that's the same from all panels. So we do have the same situation now, in a sense.
So the ranking with multiple reviewers works well but with some caveats. First, you need to have a significant proportion of the total number of application that is reviewed by multiple reviewers, so that your sampling of 15 to 20 is not 5% of the total pool. That's the first thing. So I'm not sure in this scheme here what's going to be that proportion. So Paul is right in that we're doing this now, but we do have panels that actually sit down face to face and, you know, where these things can happen. And that's not going to be the case here. The second thing that bothers me here is that the reviewers. So you say that some of the reviewers will be self-nominated, right? So there'll be a process where people can identify themselves as reviewers and declare expertise in A, B, C, D, and E, but nobody actually is out there to verify that they're a specialist in, you know, in that or the other thing, or in fact that they're better than the next guy. And yet their ponderation in that scheme is going to be the same as the others. So I'm not sure that a pilot in the fellowship competition actually tests that.
Do you want to answer anyone? While you're up.
I'll start. I think you raised some important points, and the pilot that's been done so far for the fellowships has not piloted the selection process to the College of Reviewers. I mean, this was done on existing panels. I don't think Jen meant to imply that people can simply nominate themselves to review foundation grants and then, you know, get put on the college without any further process or vetting, though I think it's fair to say the details of how those vetting processes will work have not really yet been fully sorted out.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, what we have heard from reviewers is nobody has ever asked me to review, which is why we're thinking about a self-nomination process. But whatever self-nomination process we have, there will be a vetting, and we'll be working with institutions as well as existing chairs and ISOs. and the faculty chairs that we'll establish for the college. So the idea with the college is we will manage it more like a resource pool. There will be faculty chairs. Those faculty chairs, and I will say the word faculty, some people are reacting to, so I'm not sure what we'll call them at the end of the day. Those faculty chairs will be reviewers. So those are the people that we will use to vet new reviewers. There will also be mentoring programs for new reviewers until they're comfortable with the review process.
I have a question. Hi, long time no see.
Yeah.
my question is similar to Philippe's about the reviewers. I'm wondering what individual or what group will actually match reviewers to the application. I think in the current system, at least you have a panel that's reasonably focused.
Right.
But even in that context, I think we've all had applications to panels where clearly one of the two reviewers really didn't really get it, didn't really understand the grant. It could be your fault, but not necessarily. So, and now you have a broader panel in which the likelihood of having true specialists for your grant in each of those panels must be small. So that's a worry, especially right now you're putting one half, one third of your people on the line for renewal. Now you're putting your entire program online, all the people, all the students, technicians, postdocs, and you could have, you know, this could fall down to one reviewer who may or may not be a specialist. So my question is, who actually is going to assign reviewers?
So the process that we're looking at, and Paul's been doing some thinking on this as well, so I'll let Paul answer as well. The process we're looking at is there is technology available today to help with the process of matching, not to do the whole process, but to help with the process, similar to technology that is used at NIH today. So we are looking at different solutions, but there will be a role where an external reviewer, not external, a reviewer will validate the matching. So in the same way that chairs and SOs are heavily involved with the committee selection today, there will be roles in the college to actually do that. As a foundation grant holder, we're asking you to participate in the review process as a condition of funding. It's likely that some of those foundation grant holders will take on those roles in the college for us in different areas. I don't know if you want to add to that.
The only thing I would add to that is that it's possible that in the new system with a larger number of reviewers, at least one rogue score won't have the same impact on the overall outcome as
right.
It can now. So it's actually quite surprising. So we all know if the way the success rate is now and the way the scoring is now, if there are three people scoring an application and one of them puts it in 3.8, it's probably not going to get funded. And we have some data on this, and even though there is a face-to-face panel discussion, it's pretty rare that that level of discrepancy gets resolved in a way that ends up favorable to the grant. So the 3.8 person comes up to a 4, and then the consensus is 4, and out the grant goes. So with more independent scores, and folks at CHR have actually modeled this for different kinds of success rates, you start to get to where at least that one outlier doesn't have the same effect and won't knock a grant out of the funding range the way it can now. Otherwise, yeah, I think CIHR is actively testing various software solutions that at least will help to identify candidates that might be good reviewers for a particular application. And it's fair to say we have no systematic process for that now. It rests mostly on the panel chairs and the SOs.
Yeah. So I'll keep going through the slides because I only have a few more and then we can keep asking questions. So big question that came out, what is the requirement for institutional support in the foundation scheme? When we started this process, we were talking about an enhanced institution support for the foundation applications. As we talked to different researchers and research administrators across the country, it became apparent that what we're actually asking for today is sufficient. So there is no enhanced institutional support required. We're asking the institutions to do the sign-off that they do for all CHR grants today. How many foundation grants will be funded in the first competition? So this came up earlier. We have approximately $500 million in terms of the budget for the transitional OGP and the first foundation live pilot. We're assuming through our modeling based on historical data that we'll fund somewhere in the range of 120 to 250 foundation grants. Very difficult to determine where we will sit in this range until we actually get through the registration process. Once we're at full implementation, the foundation scheme will fund approximately 114, which is a very specific number, but approximately 114 a year.
Divide something by seven. They're seven-year grants.
And an investment at this level assumes robust application pressure. So that is why we're sharing the budget between the transitional OGP and the first foundation scheme. What are the competition timelines? These are clearly in the foundation funding opportunity. Registration is June. We have released application requirements for the foundation scheme. They're available in the material on the web. The application itself isn't built yet, though, so you can't actually apply or look at the application online. It will be available when registration is complete. So the first stage one deadline is September, and the notice of decision happens before the registration is closed for the transitional OGP. There are a number of questions and answers that are available on the web if you have very specific questions, and I think your research office is now very familiar with all of the answers as well. What are the eligibility requirements for the live pilots? So there was some confusion about this one. Lists of people were sent out to the research offices. That list is the list of people who have open grants ending within the eligibility period. There are other people who are also eligible, including new investigators and researchers who have never held open funding as a nominated principal investigator or a co-principal investigator. So that's the eligibility. And again, if you have specific questions about your own circumstances and the research office wasn't able to help you, please send us an email and we can actually look up your file. Is there a separate stream for new investigators? Yes, there is a separate stream. It is still the same application, but we're asking reviewers to consider career stage when they're doing their review. And when they get to stage three, new investigators will be ranked together or considered together. There are a few terms that are changing. So most people are used to nominated principal investigator, co-principal investigator. In the foundation scheme, we talk about a program leader. In our other programs at CHR, we talk about co-investigators, collaborators, partners, and knowledge users. In the foundation scheme, we're talking about experts. So there's new language we're introducing. The grant goes to the program leader, and if you're a program leader on a foundation grant, you are not eligible to apply to the project scheme. If you are a named expert on a foundation grant, you are eligible to apply for the project scheme. Why is CHR launching the transitional OGP in parallel to the foundation? So as I explained before, we are trying to share the budget between the two. We're also trying to give researchers some opportunity to think about where their application is best suited. And that was my list of questions, and I think I covered most of the ones that were on the list that was given to me in advance. So if there are other questions, maybe I'll get Paul. Or you have your mic, you can stand there. Are there other questions? Yeah. Oh, sorry. There's one at the back.
So, I'm not sure. Just so I get this straight in my head, when everything is fully transitioned to the new system, what percentage of PIs will be funded from the foundation, and what percentage of the money will go to the foundation? What's your...
So the modeling that we did, based on historical numbers, the scenario that was approved by our science council was 45% of the budget, which represents 30% of NPIs. So there's a question in the front.
So that translates to roughly, and these numbers are rough, but roughly 900 PIs on foundation grants and the remainder in the projects, 800?
A little bit less.
A little bit less than that, 800, something like that.
It's 114 times 7.
800.
Sorry, question in the front.
Can you please show the timeline for the live pilot?
So for this live pilot, the funding starts in October 2015. But normally the funding for that September 2014 would have started in April. What happens during April and October in terms of sustainability of the grant?
So, yes, there is a gap there, which is partially why we released all of this information so far in advance. So we're hoping that people have some time to plan. There is also the transitional OGP at around the same time, so there's choices. So I think in terms of whether you apply to the transitional OGP or the foundation scheme is a choice that you're going to have to make depending on your specific situation. You want to add to that, Paul?
I think people have to appreciate that we are in a more or less flat budget scenario, and we talked and we modeled about, I mean, the other way, okay, extend everybody's grant 6 months, which would be a lovely thing to do, but you pull a lot of the money out of the budget for these first competitions if you do that.
I mean, there is an issue regarding the allocation of those funds from grants. Most of the funds are allocated on salaries, and they cannot be extended beyond a time. So what you are certainly telling us is that we need to cut operating funding rather than salaries, right?
I think so. Every situation that we've talked to many different researchers about, there are all sorts of individualized situations. So I do think people need to think about their own scenario, and we're hoping that we've given enough time to actually plan.
And I think in fairness, we take your point and we recognize that, yes, we are giving people a difficult thing to manage. And we've tried to at least keep the time frame, the length of these gaps as short as we could.
Yeah. So a couple of questions up top. Yeah?
I'm unclear about the whole transition period. And for people who have already multiple CIHR grants, some that will be coming due either in May 2015 or May 2016, what goes into the program or the foundation application? Only the projects that are coming due, or everything that they've got going on at the same time? And a corollary of that is, can one apply for a foundation scheme and a project in the same competition during this transition period?
So to answer the first question, remember the foundation scheme is about programs of research, not specific projects. So we're asking you to submit your application for your program of research, and the budget that you submit, and we'll get more information out on budgets early in the new year, the budget is for the entire program. So once somebody is successful and receives a foundation grant, existing open funding will be rolled into that foundation program. It's complicated because of a number of different scenarios, so each case will have to be looked at, but that's the intent. Your second question?
Well, Jen, you should probably address what happens if someone with multiple grants applies to the foundation grant and doesn't get it.
And someone with multiple grants who applies to the foundation scheme and does not get a grant keeps their existing grants. So none of that changes.
So the one that expires is not renewed, but the other ones that you have just carry on.
Carry on.
If you apply, can you throw in an operating grant at the same time as your foundation grant? Is it something that's outside the program? A different program?
So this is a question that keeps coming up, and there are different kinds of researchers that we fund at CIHR. Some people do project research and some people do programmatic research. If you're the kind of researcher that has very distinct projects in the OGP today, you're probably more suited for the project scheme than the foundation scheme. If you're a researcher that does programmatic research and there is a link between the different projects that you do, you're probably more suited for the foundation scheme. They are different schemes than what we merged the two today in the OGP, but we really are trying to separate those two in the future.
Jen, I'm going to try to clarify the question, though, because I don't think that was quite the question. The question rests on the premise that there's a large group of researchers who don't necessarily see themselves as only programmatic or only project, but in fact will apply to any opportunity that they possibly can. What I guess we need to know is, if someone has applied for this live pilot foundation, while they're waiting to hear, let's say they made it through the first round,
the competition for the transitional OGP is also going to come around.
Yeah.
Can that person also send in an application to that transitional OGP while they're waiting to hear from the foundation?
So the answer is no. You have to choose.
I have a question here, if I may. Just here?
Yeah.
Hi.
Sorry.
The question as to whether to commit to a program or project rests on how much money will I get for program grant? Would it allow me to work for 7 years and have some leeway to be innovative and all? At the moment, the context, we actually work very hard on budgets. We submit that. We get evaluated. And they tell us, okay, after a couple of bouncing back and forth with reviewers to a three competitions, they tell you, okay, this is the money you need to conduct this research. And then you're approved, and then boom, 25% goes off. No negotiation, nothing. And in the current context, money is pretty tight. Everybody knows that. How is someone supposed to commit to 7 years to a budget that could, you know, we don't really know how it's going to be set for 7 years? So how is the process for the budget evaluation? Is it cut across the board, 25% completely subjectively, or is there any measure for sustainability in the long run for that? The other question is, will it be indexed? Let's say the budget for research in Canada improves in 2 or 3 years. Will that be indexed, or are you locked for 7 years?
So we will get more information on the budget process out in the new year. What I will say is part of what drives that cut that happens in the OGP today is our commitment to have 400 grants at every competition. So in order to actually fund 400 grants with the budget the way it is and the way that research is, the applications are increasing, we've had to do those cuts. In these new schemes, and we can't commit to it 100%, but we are hoping to get away from that, which is why you'll see that we're committing to ranges and not specific numbers of grants so that we have some flexibility. It's not to say that we won't do any cuts, and reviewers will still be asked to look at the appropriateness of the budget submission for the program that is being put forward, but we are trying to get away from that. And certainly, I don't know if Paul or Robin, you want to talk about that, because it comes up a fair amount.
I have much to add. I think you answered it well.
Will it be indexed if the government budget for research improves in 2 or 3 years? Will it be indexed, or are you not for 7 years?
So indexing is something we're looking at. I can't commit exactly to how we will end up with the budget at the end of the day, but it's something that's been raised and we are looking at.
The issue about putting someone on a fixed amount of money for 7 years is certainly something that we have discussed. It's also an issue, particularly for relatively junior investigators whose programs might be ramping up. Bear in mind, though, and something that you haven't said, Jen, is that CIHR does put out strategic funding opportunities, and somebody who holds a programmatic grant or a foundation grant is still eligible to apply for any of those. So the only restriction is that if you hold a foundation grant, you can't apply in the open project scheme anymore. But if there's some RFA out for a specific research area, then anybody's open to do that.
Any other? Yeah. The question at the back is
over here.
Over there.
Cheap seats. Hi. Up here. So at the moment, you are wholly or partially funding 800 grants a year.
Yes.
When this is fully in place, how many grants foundation and project grants, do you expect to fund per year?
So today, with 800 grants per year, we're funding about 3,000 NPIs. The plan is to continue funding 3,000 NPIs in the future, as long as we are able to.
So to clarify, we're funding 800 new grants every year in the open operating grant competition.
Right.
The average duration of a grant is a little under 4 years. So there's roughly 3,000 grants that are being funded at any given time.
But there's 3,000
people? 3,000 principal investigators.
Because people do come in and get multiple grants,
right,
through the OGP.
And so the modeling is that we'll be funding roughly the same number of people in the new system.
That's the intent. So there's a question in the back on the... Oh, hang on. There's the microphones up there, and then there's a question down at the bottom as well.
Just to follow up on the question about, earlier question about those who apply for the foundation competition being eligible or not eligible for the subsequent OOGP in March 2015.
Yeah.
So those who apply to the foundation and don't make it past the first cut, they're going to know in time to apply in March 2015.
That's correct.
Those who make the first cut but don't make the second cut, those are the ones who are in real trouble.
They have to make
They're in real trouble, except they're sitting with probably, you know, with a reasonably decent success rate at that point, in the foundation grant competition.
But they will have not won the foundation.
No, they'll grant, have made it to the second round.
Right, but nor will they have been eligible to apply for the March 2015 operating.
So, if they aren't successful, they can apply to the next foundation scheme as well.
So my question is, and perhaps you said this before, what percentage of those who make it to the second round are expected to get funded through the foundation scheme?
So
I think it's premature to answer that. We don't even know. We don't know the number of applications. I think those applications are likely to be quite strong in the early rounds. It would be an absolute guess to try to answer that
But it's important for people to know that, say, come December, I think, 2014, if they make the first cut, then they can make an informed decision whether to pursue with the foundation scheme. I'm better off.
I think once the first cut has been made, the picture should be quite a bit clearer, because we'll have a relative idea of the budget allocation toward that scheme, and we'll have a relative idea of the total ask. But lacking any of that, it's a little hard. I don't want to throw a number out, because
it might also be an idea to provide people with their ranking then, after that first round, so that those who are successful can, again, make an informed decision of how likely they are to make the final cut, and then decide whether to stay in or opt for the project scheme.
Yeah, that is the intent. So people receive their consolidated ranking and their standard deviation. There's a question down at front. Sir.
Okay, so my question is simple. So during the transition for...
we need a microphone.
Okay, so my question is relatively simple. So during the transition, let's say there will be a two-year period of transition. So what will be the success rate for the project scheme?
The project scheme?
Yeah. It would be 15% or less? Or?
Again, I'm sorry, but we don't know the denominator, so we really have no way of predicting, probably within a factor of two, how many people are going
but
to apply.
But the number can be, let's say, less than that 10%.
I don't want to jump. I don't see that should be that low, but I really don't want to commit to anything, because we don't know what the denominator
is. My prediction is 10%.
I don't know.
Can I ask my question here? So I read in your information on the internet that somebody who's not eligible can become eligible if this person applies with somebody who is eligible.
Yes.
Right? So you're basically rescued.
As a program leader.
Right. So say you have two program leaders applying together. So does that mean that somebody who applies to the project in March can become eligible to apply in September as a co-leader?
So that came up. I don't think it's a perfect solution, but the decision was made that if you are not eligible but you come in as a second program leader, that is allowed. But remember that co-leaders or two program leaders who apply to a foundation scheme together are judged on their joint track record and their joint contributions, their joint leadership. So people keep saying, if we have two program leaders, do we submit two stage one applications? The answer is no. People have said, do we get more space in our application because there's two of us? The answer is no. You're being judged by the reviewers as a joint set of leaders.
But that person is still eligible even if she's applied in the spring.
As long as the program, one of the program leaders is eligible.
Okay, thank you.
Could I ask about the priority announcements?
Yes.
And what role they're going to play in all this? Like in terms of, you know, getting through the first stage, the second stage, et cetera?
So the priority announcements will continue to exist in the OGP and the transitional OGP. There will not be priority announcements in the foundation scheme. It's just not feasible in terms of the amount of money that actually comes through the priority announcements. And I would say that we're still looking at options for how we do that kind of shared funding in the project scheme, but they'll likely not look exactly the way that they look today. Yeah. Oh, is there another microphone?
Just one.
Yeah.
I had a question about having more than one project leader. Actually, yes. Maybe two questions. The first is in a situation where one of the project leaders is a new investigator.
Is
a new investigator. The second is not. Is it possible to go into the designated new investigator pool? And the second, should I jettison my colleague or not? But the second is, now if we have a PI and a co-PI, there's an institution that's going to receive the money as the nominated principal applicant. For a situation where the project leaders are in different universities, does the money split by CHR, or do they go to the two places? Certainly the institutions are going to feel differently about who receives this big pile of money, and then some is carved off to the second institution.
Right. So in terms of the new investigator, yes, you could have a new investigator with a senior investigator come in as two program leaders, but no, they wouldn't be considered in the new investigator pool. And again, it's about joint track record, so I think that's important to think about. In terms of the budget, what we are looking at, and it's still being finalized, is actually asking if two program leaders come together, when they're submitting their budget, they're actually showing the distribution of funding in the budget, but that's still being worked through. Yeah, question in the back?
I wanted to follow up on the modeling plan. I think the last time this presented, there was sort of a normalized distribution around $300,000 or something like that. So mm-hmm. I guess the assumption from that is that for anyone who wanted $400,000, there has to be, in the foundation scheme, there has to be offset by somebody wanting $200,000. And I guess, given that the competition will be fierce and that there will be lots of people competing for a limited amount of funds, I'm wondering whether CHR has a plan to ensure that that distribution is met so that their modeling actually is achieved when the funds are actually distributed.
Do you want to answer that?
I can try to answer that. We have spent a long time looking at the distribution of funding to people's whole programs now. And I haven't looked at these numbers recently, so I'm going to try not to put too many specific numbers out because they might be wrong. But there's a large population of people who have one grant, and those range from quite small up to, say, $150,000, $175,000. And then you have a second peak of people who have two grants, so they have that peak is probably around $300,000. And then you have some, there's a tail, right, with people with multiple grants up to, you know, a few people with seven or eight or nine or something like that. And so we have tried to model the foundation scheme along the same lines as what the top X hundred people would get now. And that, if you do that, then it comes out with a sort of average grant of 300,000, with some people getting less than that, because actually some of the top people have less than that now because of the nature of the fields they work in. Or there are people who have very successful programs who just run on one grant. And then there's a tail where people who have lots of funding and do expensive research. So without getting too much more specific and risking saying things that are wrong, we are trying to model the foundation system to reflect reasonably well what the existing situation.
So
what that means is that, for the reason that you said, in principle we could give $1 million grant in the foundation scheme, and there are a couple of individuals around Canada who have that out of the open operating grant system now, but if you give very many of those, you know, then it's going to be hard to give the numbers of grants that we want to give.
But it will be monitored very closely.
But once we have we're going to learn a lot once the actual applications come in for this first pilot, because we're also going to get a sense for the range that people are asking for.
Yep. So there's another question with the mic. Yeah.
I just want to be sure I understand about the what is now called co-investigator, co-PI. So if I have a current grant with a co-PI,
yep,
and we decide to go in to the foundation grant together, then that individual could not also apply separately for a program, for a project grant.
Right.
Right. But if under the current scheme I have a grant with that person and that person already has their own grant, they would not be forced to give it back, would they?
So from CHR's perspective, the grants are given to the nominated principal investigator. So what the nominated principal investigator does is managed at that level. So when they're putting their budget forward for a program or foundation grant, we're asking them to identify the amount of money required to deliver on their program of research. And there will be a mechanism to actually look at existing grants. Exactly how we'll do that, we haven't confirmed yet. The intent is not to take money away from people, but at the same time, we're looking at the amount of funding you need for your program of research.
Because the other option is to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
To be on the safe side, then it would be better for that co-PI not to be named as a program leader, because then that would insulate him from any risk.
So this is where each circumstance is very different, and I would encourage you to talk to the university delegate, your research office, other, I mean, Paul, I'm sure would be happy to talk to you, as well as Robin, depending on the type of research you do. But there, it's really difficult for us to answer individual circumstances because there are so many different possibilities and scenarios. But this is why we have released the information this early, so that you have some time to actually think through your options.
And sorry, one more small question on the same topic, which is, if someone is an expert, does that enable them to receive funds for a particular component of the program?
So the grant will be to the program leader from CHR's perspective, but the same rules will apply, as far as I know. We haven't gone through all of the details in terms of distribution of funding, but it'll be up to the program leader to look at that. There's a question at the back.
Yeah, since I have the microphone, I get to ask another one. I actually have two questions. They're both about feedback, but they're really, in some ways, unrelated questions. So the first one has to do with feedback to the applicant.
Yeah.
So at this point, all I've heard is that if I apply for a foundation grant, the only feedback I'm going to get is a ranking. And as much as we all like to complain about peer review and how imperfect it is, we do at least understand the scores that we get based on the associated comments. So maybe I'll stop with this first question. What feedback will we get in addition to the scores?
That I had up earlier, so the intent is that reviewers will be asked to provide strengths and weaknesses for each of the structured criteria. So for the first stage for foundation, it'll be leadership, significance of contributions, productivity, and the vision for the program. And reviewers will be asked to identify strengths and weaknesses for that, and applicants will receive that information. And at the second stage, it's on the other criteria. So there will be information that is shared with applicants, as well as their consolidated ranking.
But I'm guessing that this is borrowing from the new NIH scheme, where they're going to be more bullet point type comments. Is that correct?
So if there's bullets on this particular mock-up. What we heard from reviewers was they would like the flexibility to not have to do bullets. So reviewers will be able to do bullets or do paragraphs if they'd like, but they will be limited in terms of the number of characters. Interestingly, we have been looking at what reviewers do in the OGP today, and really sort of segmenting what kind of feedback researchers are reviewing. A lot of the feedback that our reviewers are giving our researchers actually summarize their application. So the amount of actual feedback is smaller, and we're trying to manage that so that applicants are actually getting what they need, but it's thinking about the burden on the reviewer as well.
So the second question has to do with feedback to CIHR. So Mariana said at the beginning that the train has left the station. I think we're all concerned that the tracks haven't been fully installed. So the question is, at what point are you going to be collecting data, metrics, to identify whether you're meeting the objectives with this totally untested new set of funding mechanisms?
So there is a whole series of pilots that we're doing. So for every pilot we do, we survey the applicants, we survey the reviewers, we talk to the institutions that are involved in the applications, and that information is fed into the next competition that we do. The first foundation scheme is being called a live pilot for a reason. So applicants will be surveyed, reviewers will be surveyed, and we will make adjustments as we go. So you will, I would expect to see some level of change between the first pilot and the second, in terms of not big changes, but refinements. If something is really not working after the first foundation scheme, there is a commitment from Science Council to look at that and make sure, I mean, we all want the same thing. We all want the new programs to work. So we are monitoring them very closely, and we'll be as transparent as we possibly can be to share that information with the community as we have it.
I can just add to that that there was a survey taken of the reviewers who participated on that on the fellowship panels in this first pilot, and that survey, we've seen it internally. It's going to Science Council next week, and hopefully that will be released very soon.
We really want to give Robin Tamlin and Kim Madrinas a bit of time to do their presentations because they've worked hard in putting them together. And so I'd like them to give their presentations, and then we'll open it up to more questions and answers after that. So Robin, or is it Kim? Okay, they changed the order on me. So Kim Madrinas, a longtime chair, at CIHR is going to give the first presentation.
Thank you, Mariana. I must say that I feel a little bit sandwiched here between CIHR and CIHR. I am not talking from CIHR, and I currently have no administrative commitment within CIHR. I have been giving different versions of talks regarding grantmanship and funding programs for CIHR and different organizations for the last 13 years, and I usually felt very comfortable knowing that I had most of the answers to the questions. This is going to be the first time. I have to say I have very few answers, and all I have is primarily questions, and I think that is what you are going to see in the presentation. I was asked to provide two template scenarios that would be applicable mostly to researchers in pillars one and two, biomedical and clinical, and I think Robin is going to concentrate on pillars three and four. And then built on these scenarios and hopefully provide you a little bit of context outside CIHR. So the first scenario is the case of a mid-career investigator, mid-career or even early-late career investigator that currently has two CIHR grants as a nominated principal applicant. It has it is a co-PI in another CIHR operating grant and holds several strategic grants. This individual receives the invitation to submit a proposal to the foundation grant, the pilot grant 2014. And here are a few questions that I think some of you already brought up. And for those that were not brought up, here are some of them. The first one is, how much thematic cohesion should there be in the application for that foundation grant? This individual could basically have significant diversity within the two CIHRs that he holds as an MPA, and he could also have a minimal contribution, although financially significant, in the other CIHR grant that he has as co-PI. Would that individual be better served in folding all his grants into a foundation grant, or would it be better to actually try to strategize the way he will put his applications? For example, putting a single programmatic grant on one of the CIHR operating grants as NPA and start to build the other grant as components of other programs with some of his collaborators. Would it be better for this individual to go as a co-leader in the first pilot or I should say rather than co-leader, expert in this first pilot and then build the program leader application for the 2015 in an attempt to see what will be the success rate in the first pilot foundation competition. The third question that has come up repeatedly when discussing this type of a scenario has been, what happens to the funding of the co-applicant if it is included in the current application for a foundation grant? So imagine that the PI for the grant in which he is a co-applicant decides not to come as a co-leader in this foundation grant, where the current investigator to include the portion of his contribution to that other grant in his own foundation grant, would the other investigator lose the funding for his grant? What are the effects on other NPAs, especially when these other NPAs may actually not be eligible for a foundation grant at all? Is this better to start building teams around the mid-career investigator and basically ask these other investigators to build track record as experts? And finally, which grants are going to be folded in the final budget of the foundation grant? I don't think I heard an answer of how this is going to be done. I think that it's going to be discussed, how it may be done, and they will be looking at how much money this will take, but I haven't seen a final answer on that. The second scenario is the scenario of a young investigator without CIHR funding, but that may have NSERC funding or NIH funding. Actually, even let's consider a young investigator that doesn't have any funding other than NIH funding. He would be eligible for the 2014 Foundation Grant pilot, and the question is there a better time to go in for this investigator? He already has the NIH funding. He's probably not going to lose it if he gets the foundation, right? And he may actually be very competitive for this foundation grant competition. How long to wait for the first CIHR grant for this young investigator? We have heard that if he were to go into this March competition and if he doesn't get it, he will have to wait for a whole year before actually he applies again if he doesn't go to the foundation pilot. And the third question that has been brought consistently to us has been, what are the opportunities to build a base by applying to projects too? And I think I heard that it's either one or the other on a steady state, although there may be exceptions in this transitional period. Now, all this to say, this is a personal opinion, and I submit to you for discussion. I think that these type of changes that we are seeing in the open competition at CIHR are starting to point out to the importance of strategizing the way we build our research programs. And when I say strategizing, I am not saying just playing the strategy of on the way that we know already is played, but rather be very sensitive to the changes that there seem to be coming on our way. And perhaps the change that has caught my attention, because it's not unique to CIHR, but in fact we are starting to see it in the States with NIH funding and in other countries, is that we are starting to openly talk about funding people rather than funding ideas. And I will refer you to this article in the Chronicle of Higher Education that was brought to our attention by Mariana recently, and basically in which it says that Francis Collins has openly started to say that they will now consider people, not projects, as the best indicator to approach grants. Certainly this is interesting, to say the least, and maybe actually very positive for some of us working on a particular area. Now, but this is not going to be the only idea that is changing the landscape of funding research. I would like to point out, maybe in because it's of interest to me, to the highlighted area, and this has... Shirley Tillman, a Canadian former president of Princeton, saying that we may consider what is called a terminal grant. And that terminal grant would be for investigators that are called senior investigators, some of us, I guess, in which we are starting to get a grant to wind down. rather than to build our research programs. And so, as you can imagine, some of us are not entirely clear whether we would fall in this category of terminal grants. Maybe we could be called terminal researchers. I wonder whether CIHR is already thinking about some of the foundation grants or some of the options for foundation grant applicants that are not successful as potential candidates for these terminal grants. What do they all have in common? Well, they all have in common that they may have never been succeeded where a funding scheme applicable for people rather than ideas. Actually, these are the cases that finally they ended up quite well, except one of them, the one on top left that was burned at the stake. But other than that fellow, all the others actually lately were recognized, later in their lives were recognized. So funding people may not be, an easy task in terms of discriminating those individuals that deserve that credit, nor in terms of awarding the resources that they may need to do the research. Three more points before I finish. Are the implications of the changes in the CIHR open grant competition in terms of promotion and tenure? We haven't discussed that yet, but as a chair of a department, I can say that we used to consider the capacity to renew operating grants as a major indicator of sustainability of a research program and therefore of supporting promotion and tenure. Well, now we may have investigators that will get, may get, in fact, a seven-year grant or close to a seven-year grant at a time in which, and have to go through promotion and tenure and never show whether they are able to sustain that research program. They certainly would have been able to get a research program grant once, but it's unclear how sustainable that is going to be. Also, what is going to happen with those investigators that have to be reappointed, for example, at McGill, after 3 years of appointment, if we have a one-year lag in the opportunity to apply for operating grants, for not the foundation grant, but actually for the project grant? I guess this actually is something that we will have to open up the discussion at the institutional level, and certainly I'm not sure whether it's only a matter of the institution to reach a consensus, but in fact may require the involvement of CIHR and the options that they have in terms of seeing the steady state of these changes. What does the institutional support mean? That is something that I really appreciate, Jennifer, because I thought it was very clear today that that is certainly winding down and is not going to be implemented as was initially perceived as being something that that would certainly change dramatically the way the foundation grant proposals are built in and reviewed. Finally, I think that if there is one thing that I would submit to you is the importance of strategizing, and strategizing within this new landscape of research that is coming to us. I think that the key issue, if you were to ask me, is to build strategic teams that are very much proactive in tackling the opportunities for funding research. And by that I mean, at the end of the day, what we need are the resources to do our research and make our discoveries that are impacting society. And I think that it doesn't matter whether those resources come to you as a PI or as a co-PI or even as an expert, in as much as you get the full recognition of your contributions, that I think is something that we could be looking at. The building of these strategic teams may actually work for most of us. So that's pretty much it. I think that we are going to go through the next presentation and then open up for questions. Is that the case? Yeah? So, Ron?
Thanks. Well, hello, everybody. I was going to focus a little bit more on the health services and population health research community. So just to get a handle, how many people in the group here are from those community, health services and policy? Pop Health, okay. Great. Okay, so I am speaking to some people for sure. And so first of all, I wanted to thank Jennifer and Paul, who actually have been so thoughtful about this. They really have provided leadership at the Science Council level in thinking through all the scenarios. I've never seen people do more manipulations and simulations and projections, really, for all these what-if scenarios. It's really a remarkable achievement. And they continue on, as you can see. So it's been wonderful to have them here. In our community, in fact, we are the project kind of community, and so I just wanted to highlight what programmatic research is, and I think that our communities have really got the message when we're applying for career awards that programmatic research is typically a series of linked projects that are trying to solve a given problem, fill a gap, deal with a challenge, and that's really what that research is about. So I think we're comfortable writing those kinds of grants when it comes to career awards, but we are extraordinarily uncomfortable about reviewing those kinds of grants, and I think that's one of the biggest issues for our community. So in thinking about this, I had the privilege, actually, of being able to look at some of the data to sort of say, well, how big is this challenge going to be, and how much will it be difficult for us to do this? And there's a fair bit of analysis that was done in the first 10 years of CIHR to give us a handle on what the community was doing. And I just wanted to share a little bit of that with you now, because I think that was relevant. So the first thing I thought was quite interesting is that when it comes to this concept of renewing your grants, and although that isn't purely programmatic research, it is more likely to be programmatic research than it is not. As you can see, that the height of those bars just represent the number of applications over that first 10 and a half years from the community. So you can see the biomedical community is by and large the largest. But see, what's even more interesting is that it's really a custom that's much more in the biomedical community, the checkered bar being the proportion of grant applications that are for renewal in comparison to the other communities. And I use the checkered bar because otherwise you wouldn't be able to see it. So there are some, but there are very few. And so it has not been the norm in our community. And when these renewal applications are submitted, typically from people who are doing programmatic research, is the peer review committee doesn't really know how to handle it, actually. The other thing that's been true, and I think this is related to historical funding options that were available in this country, is that health services and policy research in particular ask for very small grants in terms of duration. So they ask for typically 2.5 years worth of funding. So it's a very project-by-project kind of approach that they take. Less so with population and public health, but the phenomenon is present really in the more or less in the Pillar 3 and Pillar 4 communities that this is a phenomenon, which means that they're not that both the applicants and the reviewers are not used to seeing a series of projects together in a program of research and knowing how to review that. So that is an issue for us. And this is looking at people who applied and got a grant between 2001 and 2005 and looking at them, what happened to them over the next 5 years. Did they get sustained 5 years of funding over the next 5 years? The red bar, the red sad line at the bottom is the health services and policy research community, with only 19% of them having sustained funding over that next 5 years, even after being awarded a first grant, followed by the population health community and then clinical, and then biomedical did the best. So this has to do with a lot with the way in which we write grants, have to resubmit them to get funded, are preoccupied with methodology rather than the ideas, typically, and don't really preoccupy ourselves very much with how people with their track records have been. So it is a challenge for our community, but also a fabulous opportunity to really get out of the box and start doing research in a more programmatic way. And so basically, this has been the phenomenon. We apply for new grants. We apply for shorter grants. We haven't had the luxury of getting 5 full years of extended funding, so this would be a new thing for us. We tend to be hard on our community, and we get them to come back because they had the wrong number of scale points on a Likert scale. I mean, we do things like that to each other, and so we have to get over that. So we actually had a call to action to try to get our community to sort of get out of that box and into another one. Had a boot camp here calling sort of the national leaders from Canada to to Montreal to sort of say, what are we going to do? And the idea is to actually foster support for our community in both writing programmatic grants very specifically and actually doing the peer review for that and the developing a monitoring and feedback system so we can see how well we do. So that's a challenge for us. I want to introduce you to Teresa Giorgas because she was the lead here from McGill along with Howard Bergman who attended that workshop. And Teresa, you can just wave your hand. And so, yeah. So more, she's here as a thought leader, actually, in the McGill community. So in terms of the transition, I thought it would be helpful to look at scenarios for our community. This is one of those disclaimers that says no one in this book looks like who you are. In case if somebody looks familiar, it's not you. So the first is a new investigator scenario. So here's someone who is kind of brand new, might have done a postdoc fellowship funded by CIHR. They've got a little pilot study going for $50,000. It was funded through a research foundation. And they've published that pilot study results in a very high impact journal. And although they work with others, they think now's the time to really apply for a foundation grant. And so they go in as program leader on their own on that foundation grant and take advantage of that little window that says in your first 5 years there'll be a separate stream for young investigators. So this is an example of one doing that. Here's another one that decides not to do that. So this investigator essentially has a CHR-funded project with a budget of $100,000. For a period of 2 years, but they see their program ramping up. It was a little bit what Paul was talking about. They see their program really ramping up to maybe being $500,000 a year. This is really the first stepping stone on a bigger program research. So they decide that they would not apply for the foundation scheme because it would be hard for them to justify that they need a budget, let's say, of $500,000 a year, given that they're only getting $100,000 for a two-year grant. So they decide they'll stay in the project scheme and build essentially additional components of the research program and the project scheme and then move over to the foundation scheme. So that's their strategy for looking ahead as a young investigator and thinking what their best strategy would be. So here's a mid-career investigator, and this mid-career investigator has only strategic grants. So they're eligible to apply for the foundation scheme. And they decide, they have a budget typically running at $150,000 per year for their strategic grants, so they decide that they're going to apply as the program leader for the foundation scheme and apply roughly in the same budget range, because that's what they've been getting, $150,000, and then use the strategic funding opportunities to supplement their program research, because they can't apply for projects, obviously, but they can't apply for the strategic opportunities. So that's another scenario. And let's say they imagine that there'll be a lot of strategic opportunities in their area because that's a very hot area and a lot of people are putting money into that area. Here's another example of two individuals who have worked together for the past 7 years on a number of multi-year projects in the same thematic area. One of them is eligible for the foundation scheme, the other is not, but because their grant doesn't expire, but they decide that they're going to apply together nevertheless, covering another scenario that we've discussed already. Here's another example of a team that also has worked together for the past 9 years. They've had both strategic grants and open operating grants. They want to continue to work together, but they decide that their best plan will be that one of them goes in as a project lead for the foundation scheme. The second one will be a program expert on that foundation scheme, but Dr. C, in this case, is going to take advantage of the project scheme and get additional funding through applying for projects that will supplement, and they can work together still on this sort of global team approach to research. So that's another example. And finally, I'm just going to end with this third example, or final example for senior investigators. This is a person who's had a number of CIHR grants over 20 years. Their work has been primarily partnered with another senior scientist. They plan to continue to do their work together, and they plan to jointly apply for the foundation scheme as co-program leaders. Should the application be successful, of course, neither of them will be able to apply for the project scheme. They can certainly apply for strategic grants and grants from other places, but they're in it together for 7 years. So I think these are just examples of the kind of thinking. I think we've been trying to get out of the box and thinking about other scenarios, so I won't go through all the rest of them, but here's, for more information, please go to these sites. And then maybe we can both respond to any questions you have, along with Jen and Paul. Marianne, over to you.
So
Thank you both to Kim and Robin for some really thoughtful presentations, and it really shows you the variety of people that exist in our community, and obviously we want all of them to succeed. So for specific questions, it'll depend on the question of who will actually answer them, but we'll hop.
Yes, I have a question. It was a bit addressed by Robin Tamlin about writing for 7 years. How much detail is required about the methods? My experience with CIHR is they really, really ask me about methods, and it's possibly there will be bias. Possibly, I mean, there is always bias, but never mind.
Olga, exactly true.
I think the issue
is the grant length, right, prohibits the capacity to write detailed methods for each and every study.
Right, and 7 years.
Years, the final studies on that tree are really obviously going to be molded probably by earlier studies. And so really the challenge is not writing it, I don't think, because people write those things for career awards. The challenge is reviewing them. And in fact, that's where the training of reviewers to review foundational grants, particularly in our pillars,
and
that's not typical of us, we don't behave that way,
right,
is going to be critical to their success.
The methods to evaluate the actual value of the project, at least to some extent.
That's been our thinking. That's been our thinking. I think that this is now off the record. This is not CIHR, okay? I think when you're publishing in fairly strong journals that you actually have been demonstrating that you have in the past developed and done and completed projects with superb methods and you're publishing in great journals, is to question a person that they can't go forward with the same excellence is hard for me to understand. So I think we have to get over ourselves that we have to look at everybody's methods and be the super police on methods. That really has gotten us into trouble in the past. It's led to this terrible cycle of resubmitting for the tiniest little bothersome issue. And so I think we have to stop doing that. And I think we can stop doing that in this foundational scheme. Maybe not all of us can stop doing that. We'll have to, sort of tighter ourselves off of the methods preoccupation. But I think that we just have to use different calibers to actually assess these things, I think.
And another short thing, 7 years is a relatively long time. It's a commitment, and new things can come up. How wedded are you? I mean, can you ever divorce some of what you put in your...
Oh, divorce your co-lead?
Well, no, not your colleague, but you know, 7 years is a long time. Many things happen in science during 7 years.
I know.
So how can you commit for 7 years? I mean, it's really worse than a marriage in that respect if you can't divorce. At least part of, your methods, perhaps, or part of what you wrote. I'm just asking, how committed are you? How much to the letter of what you wrote will you be held if you get funded? And you don't really want to go through the hassle of being refunded if you want to take a little bit of a different direction, because 7 years is very long in science.
I agree, but I think this will be a little bit dependent upon your area of research and how volatile you are as a person. I mean, I think that there are some people who truly get out of the box and they redirect in 5 years. There are some people who are in it for 25, 30 years, more or less in the same area. And I think that's really the conditionality that you have to think about. You don't have to ask for 5 years. If you don't want to ask for 7 years, if you think that's not me, go for the project scheme for sure. But on the other hand, look at the opportunities, actually. 7 years to actually tackle an area and switch methodologies midway through and sort of say, yeah, this isn't working, I'm going to do something different, and not have to go back to the trough and say, gee, can you support me for this? I think you can be innovative and experimental. This is my opinion again, apologies, but please jump in before I...
Just to add to that, I think that is the intent of the foundation scheme, is that you have flexibility. So it is actually why we're not asking for detailed methodology in the application. We're looking at overall approach. So there is going to be an expectation that you deliver results in that 7 years, and that'll certainly be factored in when you come for your second foundation scheme. But the intent is that the investigator has a track record, and they should have some flexibility to pursue new lines of thinking as they move forward in their 7 years.
Yeah. First, it's hard for me to just overcome my wish to say that I wish the train never left the station. I think that the motivation as presented here by the chief scientific officer of CIHR about 10 months ago was twofold. One, to make the peer review better, and that's great. I mean, we should have a better peer review. But the whole thing of two streams makes it complicated. 7 years is time in which the monetary scheme changes, the science changes. Somebody who was able to produce great for the last 2 years, after 2 years, within the 7 years, cannot do that, and vice versa, etc. And I think that CIHR is taking a simple scheme of grants that needed some improvements and makes it now very complicated, and the whole transition thing, etc. But I just want to emphasize, that was in order to tell you what I think about the entire thing. I want now to emphasize one thing, which has to do again with the smoothness of the transition. I think that CIHR did not take into account researchers who preferred to go to the project scheme. It's now anybody who wants and will be successful with the foundation scheme is, you know, there is some transition, they can apply still to the regular operating grants, etc. But somebody, just like was mentioned earlier, who needs to renew in March 2014 or in September 2014 and prefers to go to the project scheme needs to wait 2.5 years before he can go there. So yes, there are operating grants in the middle, or one, but entire Canada is going to apply, right? It's not the same. And these things has a meaning. It means technicians that, you know, people will not be able to continue fund, postdocs, etc. So overall, I think that the smoothness is not there. There's no mechanism for people who want to go to the project scheme to really make it smooth.
No, I understand your point. I mean, the mechanism is the transitional OGP. I don't think all of Canada will apply, because anybody who's applied to the foundation scheme won't apply, and that's a lot of established researchers who put multiple applications now into each OGP. That being said, sure, lots of people will apply. The other alternative with trying to run all three of these programs, if we tried to do two OGP competitions a year through this whole transition, the administrative costs and the number of panels and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we believe to be unworkable. So we know it's not a perfect solution, but there wasn't one.
All right. I have another question here, Paul. The decision to commit to program or foundation actually allows, you know, I mean, it's, you have to evaluate the risk and you have to evaluate the benefits also of the project, right? If you go for project or if you go for the program, right now we know very little about the project. We don't know if 5 years is going to be the rule or the exception. And there was a pretty wide range of amounts that was presented as fundable through the project. And I think the top amount was 100 or 120. My point precisely is we should know everything about the project before deciding lucidly to commit to the program.
Yeah, I think the focus of this event was meant to be primarily on the foundation scheme, because that's the one that's rolling out now. The project scheme is going to look a lot more like the present OGP, certainly, than the foundation scheme does. Durations can be as long as 5 years, although as now, the average duration will not be 5 years. The project scheme is also going to be taking in a lot of specialized programs that exist now that have very short durations, like 1 year. So those kinds of things will come into the project scheme. But it will be possible to get 5-year awards through the project scheme. I think the modeling is for an average grant in the project scheme to be 125. There will be individual grants that can be substantially bigger than that. And again, the project scheme is taking in programs that, like MPDs, that give $25,000 grants. So there are programs that exist now that are are small in scope that will be rolled into the project scheme, and that depresses the numbers in the modeling. But there's an urban legend going around that the maximum grant is $100,000 or $125,000, and it's simply not true.
Yeah, I just about the urban legend part, I think the key here is to have as much information as early as possible on the project grant so that people can make clear and well-educated decisions about which track to
pursue. I think that's a really fair point.
Right. So I just want to clarify about the transitional OOGP in March 2015. There's nothing really different about that competition than what we've been doing for the last several years. Am I correct? Really, the only thing is that the two September competitions on either side have been dropped. Is that right? That's really nothing different about that.
That's basically right. There's nothing fundamentally different about the February 2015 transitional OGP to what we're doing now, except that the September ones on either side of it won't exist. That means that there will be more applicants. The time frames will be a little different because it'll probably just take longer to do everything. But basically, that will be the OGP that you know now. Oh, you want the mic, Phil? Phil, you should just shout. I want the mic.
No, there's one at the back. No, just speak into it.
Okay, great, thank you. I would like to put a vote of congratulations to CHR for actually moving things forward and thinking out of the box and responding to negative comments about peer review, and also developing the foundation for, I think the biggest group that's going to benefit is people in Pillars 3 and Pillars 4 who have not had this opportunity to write programmatic grants, yet mentally we are programmatic, except as Robin eloquently says, we tend to be pigs at the trough, and if there's a trough we have to apply for it because we can't be programmatic. The only thing I would ask when it comes time, not for the registration but for actually submitting the grant, is that there is a little section where we kind of can, argue or present our programmatic approach in the past, because it may not be obvious from our CVs when people are, applying for this grant because there's this opportunity and we make our funding look like this and then we make it look like that. So, that half page that says, demonstrate in the past, your programmatic approach and how it will continue in the future, because I'm just afraid that our CVs will look a little patchy.
So thanks for those comments. Thanks for saying something nice. That's always pleasant. But I do want to clarify one thing. I don't think it's correct to say that Pillar 3 and Pillar 4 people haven't had the opportunity to write for programmatic type grants. I think what Robin, and thank you, Robin, for the nice things you said too. I think what Robin pointed out is that the culture of asking for renewal grants has for some reason not taken root in the Pillars 3 and 4 community in the way that it has in the Pillar 1 community. I think the opportunity is there now. It's a more explicit opportunity in the future program, but I agree with Robin, it's going to be very important for the Pillar 3 and 4 community to get together and figure out how to make the most out of this opportunity.
Well, just one second before you ask your question. We do plan to have additional sessions, by the way. This is not a one-of. So as things roll out, we will be planning to do additional sessions. And there's some idea that we may actually have somewhere we go out to institutes rather than just stay here on campus. So all of those things will come down the pipe so that everybody gets help along the way.
Just a comment. I've talked to a lot of researchers across the country in my various roles. I think CIHR probably knows there's a lot of concern. Not surprising. I think clearly peer review needs to be looked at again, and I understand that. But I think this is a tremendous roll of the dice with Canadian health research. It may pay off. I think many of us aren't quite aware of what the advantage is going to be, but there are some needs, especially in pillars 3 and 4. But it's a tremendous roll of the dice, and I think, you know, if it fails, which it could, it's research that pays, and it's the researchers that pay. And, you know, none of you will probably be at CHR in 10 years when we know the outcome of this. Maybe you will, Jen, but hopefully Paul won't be. But anyway, well, hopefully you will be actually in some capacity. But anyway, I guess that's the worry. And it is a tremendous gamble on our health research system, which if you look and... Many assessments of Canadian research has universally hit above its weight, always. And that's on the line, and hopefully it'll be better. I think we don't know if it will be or not. That's the worry.
Bill, and for voicing concerns that, you know, we've heard before, and we are aware that, you know, these are important changes that are making. But as far as Canadian researchers hitting above their weight, I don't think that's because of CIHR's policies. I think it's because Canadian researchers are pretty damn good. And I think that's going to remain the case. So I'm concerned, but I'm also confident that our community is strong enough to continue to play the kind of role it does internationally, that it plays now internationally.
I guess I would like to stress the fact that we are talking about a life pilot experiment for the foundation, right? And under that terminology, I suspect there will be opportunities to fine-tune, take on what works and eliminate what doesn't work. And I would like to stress one thing that I believe some of us will remember. When we used to go to Ottawa for the CIHR chairs and ISO meetings, we were asked about feedback on how to implement new programs. And I think there was wide consensus about programmatic opportunities, program grants. And basically it would be a type of grant that would consolidate several CIHR applications, work on a modular budget, and move on. I think that one of the issues that probably reflects the uncertainty and the discomfort that you are hearing from the community is that it's not only the programmatic aspect of it, but the peer review, what is really at stake. And I think that is, in my opinion, the main issue of concern. I think that the community is ready to accept programmatic grants at some point of a career of an investigator, and they are very simple to implement, at least in our minds, right? But not so for the peer review that you are proposing.
So I think, and we've been thinking about this for a number of years now, and one of the first things we did is we actually talked to a number of other funding agencies around the world. The issues that we face in Canada aren't that different from many other countries. And the one thing that we heard categorically over and over again was don't try and just tweak. If you really want to do and see significant change, you need to actually look at the core system. And it's very difficult to achieve what we want to achieve at the programmatic level without actually looking at the criteria, the application, what the reviewers are looking for, how we match reviewers to applications. So I think when we started this process, we actually thought about doing them separately, and as we got into it, it's really hard to separate the two. So it means a lot of change, but I think we will see benefits from those changes. We're trying to go as cautiously and slowly as we can and monitor it as we go. And if we do see that there is something not working, the organization, I think, is committed. Science Council is committed to make the changes, and we'll continue to monitor as we go. But I think from all the different models that I've seen around the world, we are optimistic about what it is we're implementing.
One last question. Paul and Jennifer, thanks for this. I'm sure there's things that have kept you up at night over the past couple of years. And to follow up in a serious way on Phil's question, what are the things that you're most worried about? What do you think are the greatest risks for failure in any part of this whole conception?
Like Jen, I'm optimistic about this. So I don't like to think about eventual failure scenarios. I think the biggest challenge, however, is getting the matching right. I think this will be a clear improvement over the existing system if we come up with a really good algorithm to make sure that we get a set of reviewers on each application that bring both the specialized knowledge that they need to assess the science in the application, but a little broader perspective than an individual panel might have now. I think if we can do that right, we will clearly improve the system. I think if we don't get that quite right, it's going to look more like today's system. I don't think it'll necessarily be a disaster, but we won't necessarily realize the kind of improvement that we might realize from application-based review.
One of the things that I worry about is that our scientists in our community aren't getting the message. And that's why this is one of the first, as we know more of the details. And I really wish and hope that all of you will take this back to your communities and talk to your neighbors, talk to groups of scientists, try and get the word out, because when they try to register and find out they're not eligible or they want to do more than what they're being allowed to do, and they'll be very disappointed. We don't want that to happen. So read the information, ask the questions now, and you know you have a lot of things to think about in terms of making decisions. And I think we really will close it now, and any of you that have questions can come down to the front with more specific ones. But I want to thank Jen very much for coming, and thanks to Kim and Robin for asking some more of the difficult questions that we have to get the answers for at some point. But I just want to wish the community very well and succeed.